Greetings and salutations, the Agile Revolution. Tony here.
And Craig, and we're at YAR 2014 in Brisbane, and it's a great pleasure to be sitting here with Scott Shaw. How are you doing, Scott?
Hi, Craig. I'm doing good.
So you're one of the speakers on the YAR tour, but you normally spend your time at a little company that some people might have heard of called ThoughtWorks.
Yeah, I've been at ThoughtWorks for about 9 years now. I'm called the head of technology for Australia. So I kind of have license to go stick my nose in things, whatever I think needs noses stuck. So I like my job. I can write the job description the way I want it.
And so you're here, I want to talk to you about a few things, but you're here to talk about microservices, which is the flavour of the month, right, Tony?
Definitely the flavour of the month. It's microservice everything.
So, I mean, it's something that has, I guess, jumped to prominence, but ThoughtWorks been pretty much a mover and shaker behind that whole thing. So
I think different people think microservices are different things. For us, it's just a different way to build applications that gets away from some of the problems of monolithic, big monolithic applications. There's no matter how well engineered the code is, we find that the bigger an application gets, the slower it becomes to maintain and the more difficult it becomes to deploy. So there's been a movement. There's a number of things, you know, DevOps, understanding REST, using the web as an integration framework, cloud, the availability of cloud, being able to automate all the infrastructure. All these things together have let us build applications as separate processes rather than as one big monolithic web app.
Okay, so we just we had a good conversation with Simon Brown just before. So he had a version that, yes, you can move to microservices, but the trouble is there's no intermediate between the monolith and the microservice, so people are just jumping into the microservices phase without any transition. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that would be ill-advised. I don't think I think our advice is always start small. If you saw Evan and Beth and John's talk, you know, it took them 6 months to get, or 3 months to get, two microservices deployed.
These guys are at REA, for those who went to the conference.
Yeah, so, and oftentimes you need to start with the monolith. If your monolith is not well factored, if you are making lots of big joins across different bounded contexts in your monolith, then you're going to have trouble breaking that up into services. It might pay to focus on refactoring your monolith first before you go splitting it out into individual services.
So your talk is very much based on, I guess, the from being someone who's been along the journey with a number of different groups on their microservices journey. You know, what are some of the key things that I guess that you've seen, or some of the things that you shared in your talk?
Yeah, I mentioned there are a lot of starting criteria. So there are, and you can find that in a number of different talks. You know, what are the basics that you need to have in place? The most important in my mind is domain-driven design. You need to understand the business domain well, and you need to use your services need to model your bounded context and your domain. But beyond that, there's a mindset shift that occurs, and the things that I talk about in my talk are, how do you aggregate data? So when you get to the point in your project where you're doing reporting or search or just making simple aggregate sort of logic, how do you go about doing that when the data is stored possibly not consistently in different databases inside the microservices? So that's a problem for some people. The next one is security. So if you have lived behind a firewall and you trust that firewall, then that's great. I'm happy for you. But most people are becoming more aware that their perimeters are porous. And so we need to be able to protect and implement access control rules at the services and know certain, you know, with great certainty and trust who the identity of the end user is on behalf of whom we are accessing that data. So that becomes very difficult, passing that identity along securely. And the last thing is just, how do you manage change? When you need to refactor the domain, as we always do when we discover new things as we're building out systems, how do you refactor when your logic is split between different teams, different parts of the globe, different services, different process boundaries? It becomes much more complex, and you have to have a good strategy for doing that.
I think that's one of the things that strikes me the most, is the managing change. And I think that's the one that companies, people in general, struggle with. So what are your thoughts on that? You know, are there strategies that they should be putting in place?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the reasons we we often end up with this kind of solution because businesses want to be more responsive. They want to be able to experiment with new business models. They want to take their existing corporate assets and be able to reuse them and sort of open them up for innovation for in new, unexpected ways. And so it's breaking things up. You can't do that when you have to deploy, when you have a 3-month UAT cycle before you can go live with any new system. So we're looking for how can we get how can we be able to deploy small changes more quickly? I think that's a theme that I hear over and over in the conference here, but this is one of the ways. And yes, you have to become mature in some new technologies in order to do that.
I guess there's some building blocks. I mean, obviously we're an Agile podcast and we'll get back to talk a bit more about Agile, but there's a building block that just, you can't jump into this. You need those basic Agile or XP principles at your heart before you can really start building into this, right?
Well, that's how I know to build software. I mean, that's the way that's been most successful for me. So, and a lot of people have this question about, and that Simon talked about, how agility and architecture, do they go together? Is there a role for architects in the Agile process? And I definitely think there is. I definitely think a technical vision, good communication of architectural principles is really important, and there's different ways that you can do that. But you have to be open to that. The architects have to communicate well and be able to interact and gain the trust of the Agile teams and vice versa. The teams have to have a good rapport with the architects.
So I want to ask you the same question I asked him. So one of the question I have for you is something that I've seen, is that the middle management layer or management in general don't know what to do with the architects. They don't know how to use architects properly. What's your take on that?
Yes. I think well, part of it is that there are many different kinds of architects. I think it's a very vague term, but senior technical people who make big decisions and communicate principles and vision, I think yes, because they're often some of the most depressed people in an enterprise because nobody listens to them. The business always wins out, so it's really important that those architects be tied in both to the pragmatics of building things and to the business goals that you're trying to achieve. So I think maybe not, if the architects are measured, their performance is measured on how many documents they write or how thick those documents are, then you probably will have difficulty finding productive things for them to do.
Yeah, I had an architect once tell me that the measure of his work was whether he could get a staple through the document or not, right?
that's
a bit of an odd measure.
I don't want to bag out architects because I think it's an important function and there are some really good ones and really smart people out there. And so I think it can be done well.
So my question is, microservices as a term has really only been last two years, maybe a little longer than that, where it's really been in popular culture. But there's nothing new in this whole idea. We've always talked about building things small and maintainable, and those type of things. What do you think has changed? What has happened? What's been the catalyst for us to now really embrace microservices and get a lot more people talking about it?
Well, I think it's cloud deployment, so infrastructure as code, and now moving to things like Docker, where we can very easily, we can script out what our infrastructure is going to look like, and we can run that in our personal environments and run that in a cloud production environment. That's really changed the way we look at, and we're now able to take a lot of the complexity that existed in monolithic applications and shift that to the infrastructure and have the same kind of version control, testing and ease of management that we had just with application code before.
So, I was taking a deep breath in. Agile. So we get back to the Agile premise, right? So you said that's the way you know how to build software, right? So I think the other issue here is with the microservices thing, there are areas or there are companies that are starting to take it on that aren't in the Agile mode. How do you see that as a way for them to work as well?
So I think to be successful with this approach, you need to have teams that take ownership of their output. So if by not being agile, you mean you have a pool of developers and you bring that pool of developers and keep them busy and then they hand something over to a testing team and they're done with it, then I don't think they can be successful. I think that the team has to own these services. If you built it, you support it, and you get woken up in the middle of the night by the pager or cell phone when it goes wrong. So that to me is the essence of Agile, right? It's the team taking ownership of the business success of whatever it is they're building and keeping that ownership over the longer term.
So does that make microservices a technical approach that helps you with your organizational structure, or is it something more that's an organizational structure that then has a flow-on effect to your technical architecture?
Well, you know Conway's law that if an organization builds systems, the system will mimic the structure of the organization. We like to take advantage of that and say that we, whatever your organization is, let's try and make sure that the teams that are closest to the systems own them. Likewise, if you are able to change the organization, you might want to think about the systems that you want to have and shape your organization to mimic that. And if that means lots of little services, then maybe you need lots of little long-lived teams that are going to take ownership of those services.
So it really does come back to, and we've seen this a lot over recent years, is getting teams more aligned around product than projects. And to me, that's a success factor that must be in place for you to be successful at microservices.
I agree, yeah. I had that on my last summary slide at first, and I changed it. But I do think it's very similar, yeah, the product mindset. I know I've been working with this team in Beijing I talk about a lot, but you know, we've stayed with the same system for 4 or 5 years now, evolving it over time. And that's, you can never say, oh, we built this and now it's in production and it's in maintenance. It's never clear, and it doesn't seem to matter a lot what's the difference between maintenance and evolution and what's the difference between project work. It's all one thing, and it all goes towards the success of the business.
I think one of the things that's been inspiring, and I know Yao ran a series of Yao Nights earlier in the year with one of your colleagues at ThoughtWorks. And whenever you give a microservices talk, it's amazing the types of people that turn up. The people who've never touched a line of code turn up, the code purists, doesn't matter whether you're Ruby or Java or .NET. And it's one of these things that I think has been quite successful. It's just so cross-cutting. Is that what you're seeing as well?
I think there are a lot of people, yeah, they may be disappointed when they find out that it's not a silver bullet. But yeah, I do. It is one way for us to talk to people who are making big, large-scale, big-picture technology decisions in organizations. It's a fairly technical topic that they can understand, and I think if implemented correctly, can actually help them evolve towards a more responsive business.
The interesting thing I see with microservices, having walked around just the last couple of days, is everybody's got an opinion. And all the opinions are different, right?
Yeah.
And that seems to be a very big disparity of thought between all the different people as to what microservices are. So everybody's jumping on the word. What really does microservices mean?
I think Adrian Cockcroft had a definition of a bounded software with bounded contexts that are a single bounded context that can be implemented and deployed separately and run in different processes. I think that, to me, that getting back to the business definition of the domain and what a bounded context is, and being able to evolve them separately. So a lot of people wonder how big should a microservice be. So from my perspective, it should be no bigger than your head. So my colleague James Lewis says that a lot. What that means is partly, you know, no bigger physically than the code should not be bigger than James's head. But also it means that it should be a concept that fits in your head at one time. You should be able to hold that concept at whatever, at the appropriate level of abstraction in your mind and be able to reason about it and understand what it does.
Is there a source? One of the things about this particular term is because there is that confusion and disparity in the community. Is there a source that, if you really just want to go and learn more about microservices, besides turning up to your talk, where do people go? You think about Agile kind of stuff is the same type of thing to a certain extent, but is there a definitive source?
Well, I guess I should plug Sam's book. So my colleague Sam Newman is writing a book for O'Reilly. It's in the early release now. You can download that from O'Reilly. And Also,
that's really, I mean, you know, plugs aside, and I was expecting to say maybe ThoughtWorks.com as well, but I'll put that in for you.
Martin Feldman's blog also has quite some interesting articles on there. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it's an interesting thing is that there's a lot of people talking about it. There's a few people talking about it, but yeah, there's no real definitive source at this point.
Yeah, and I'm sure different people think it is different things. I just hope that people, that it's not co-opted by product vendors or people who think microservices means I need to go out and buy some other kind of piece of kit to make this work. It's not about that. It's about thinking about how to structure your system and empowering teams to build things that they can support over the long
term. That's how you know it's been successful, right? If a vendor pops onto it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've seen that with Agile, right? So we've seen the same thing, Agile in a box.
Yes.
And you can follow a book and you can follow the step by step and then we know what happens, right? So they're, I think the same risk for microservices as well. The other question, sorry, Greg, the other question I had there was, interesting one is, I think we talk about things being too big and whether you cut them into microservices, but I also see a risk in them chopping them into too many small pieces, right? When they should actually, I think it's sort of the derivative of taking it past common sense. Do you see a risk in that?
If you start out that way, yeah. I think you need to learn to deploy two services. And if you get good at that, then you can start to grow and split. I think it's possible to get... The ideal is we don't maintain software. We just throw these services away and build new ones. The cost of doing that is less than trying to understand the whole. To get to that requires a lot of maturity. So you're not going to do it overnight. And maybe that approach isn't right for everybody.
We heard from realestate.com.au here about their success, and they quite openly say, for, as you mentioned before, that it took them, you know, X amount of months just to get to two services. Is there anybody that's sort of sticking out as you that's a leader in this that are really pushing the boundaries in relation to microservices, or is it too early to tell?
Clearly Netflix is doing a version of microservices that's very impressive, and I think a lot of the web startup, you know, not necessarily startups now, but the big companies who are web-centric and their entire business is on the web are finding that this is a way to go, especially if they're doing cloud deployments. If they're deploying things to the public cloud, you need to be doing, you know, small pieces that fit in an isolated container. And I definitely think REA is a really forward-thinking company, and they're doing a lot of things right. And I think looking at how they're doing things, it is probably a good model for other companies.
Excellent. The other thing I did want to briefly mention to you, so we both worked together on the Agile Australia conference because we like to keep our hands in on that. And you, for a number of years or a few years now, have been involved in the technical stream there. So you do fly the flag. Something that Tony and I have been talking about recently is that we kind of lost the tech in Agile, which is a bit of a shame. What are some of the other things you're seeing? So microservices to me is almost, it's one of those, if they're rewriting the XP book today, I expect that, you know, DevOps and microservices and things would be in that book. But what other things are you looking for, you know, perhaps with your conference hat on, or just in general when you're talking to people about software agility?
Clearly Docker. I mean, if we're getting technical, Docker is something that's really taken people by storm, and I love working with it just for what I'm doing when I'm experimenting with things. And that idea, that is clearly going to evolve a lot more. So Docker is probably just the beginning of having a really minimal system that can, containerized system that can be deployed. That's different from a J2EE container or IIS or something like that. That's a completely contained operating system. That functional languages, another one that gets a lot of play here at Yao, but it was a style of programming I learned before I became a Java programmer way back when, and I think people that is contributing a lot to just people thinking about software, thinking about the quality of the software they build and thinking of it as a real craft and profession that they need to bring some, there are things they need to learn outside of just writing Java code.
And I think we've seen some of your colleagues, you've been doing, pushing things like Clojure and into different organizations where it's made sense. But overall, what are you seeing as you talk to other organizations? And as you said, poke your finger in it. Corporates taking a little more notice of some of the newer languages? Or are we just stuck with, you know, Java C# for the foreseeable future?
No, definitely. There's a lot of interest in Scala. It's kind of a... I don't know why exactly. It's a nice migration path from Java, and people are a little more comfortable with that. There are certainly other, you know, I really like Clojure, and I think people should look at it more closely. Golang is really quite interesting. We're building a lot of that for microservices. Is a really lightweight language that makes it easy to write small services. A lot of people like that, and the whole model of asynchronous model that's embodied in Golang is really cool too. So there are those things are definitely catching on. They start in developer communities when businesses want to bring that quality mindset and that developer community into their business and attract better developers. Then they tend to that language comes along with them sometimes.
Yeah, I like the thought that you said there about the craftsmanship, you know, that software development is craftsmanship. Yes, I'm humming in the background, by the way, people. Somebody's ringing. It always happens when you do a podcast. But the whole idea of that craftsmanship, I see that seems to have diluted itself a bit over the period of time, and that concerns me. What's your thoughts on that?
Well... Not at ThoughtWorks. It's still very...
And they're hiring.
And that's still very important to us. And we make sure we hire people that have that mindset, and we're always looking for people that have that mindset. It's really... we care a lot about the quality of what we build and working on our own tools and working with the tools and environments that make us more successful.
What are you seeing? So one of the things we've spoken about, you know, so in our industry, diversity is a big thing and bringing new people through. But taking the diversity angle away just a moment, what are you seeing in the new people coming through? You know, back when we all started, when we had more hair, but we really cared about our craft, and because you had to. You know, back when I started on COBOL, for example, you had to care about it because you only got a couple of hits of the compiler in the middle of the day. And as we progressed on, I just see that this whole thought about the craft of coding has disappeared a little bit. Sometimes I think just by the fact that the technology shields a lot of the problems. But I guess my question to you is, what are you seeing through the graduates and the people coming through, you know, the people apply to ThoughtWorks? Is the quality still there? Or?
Oh, we get some amazing grads. Really, I'm just amazed at how much I learned from young people and how quickly they learn about business and learn about the, you know, business software and what they have to do and become leaders, you know. I've seen really young people stand up and become leaders, technology people or whatever. You know, you know who those people are very quickly when they get out of, when they come on as grads. And we have very specific criteria that we're looking for in the people that we hire, so I probably don't see a fair cross-section, but we have been in the top three grad hires for the last several years, you know, either number one, number two, or number three, and the grads seem to have a good experience, and we really like them.
So my flip side to that is maybe because the technology has become a little more accessible and you know, things are a lot easier than they were. Not easy, actually easy is not the word wrong word, but you know, the tooling is a lot better. Maybe that's actually allows people to have more scope for thought and do better stuff.
Yeah, I think it's learning how to use the tools is part of the craft. Learning how to use an IDE is one of the things that's really important. But if there's anything, I think people are coming out of school nowadays with, they don't have enough Linux, they don't have enough Unix understanding. I think Unix is, the Unix philosophy is something that we talk about a lot in microservices.
Which is actually, it was a microservice, right?
Yeah, and then just the ability, because of the stuff I was talking about before, of being able to, infrastructure as code and that being part of the application, it's really imperative that young developers learn about how to do systems programming and learn how to do system administration properly, and that's probably something we have to teach people a little more than just programming languages.
And they need to be more polyglot too, as you talk about. Yeah. You're talking about, oh, I do a bit of Docker, and I'm in Go, and I'll have a bit of Scala over here. And
yeah, if you're not interested in learning a new language, then you have to wonder if you're really suited for this industry. I mean, people should jump at the opportunity. If they're not eager to do that, then I'd question whether they really want to work in this business.
So the other thing ThoughtWorks have been doing here at the conference is talking about defending the internet and those type of things, which you guys have been stepped up and, you know, started to push, particularly the tech industry or the software development industry, to be more aware of. You know, where are you at on that journey at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, we're just trying to raise awareness, particularly among technology people, particularly among developers. This is, the internet is our resource, and we take for granted our ability to move freely across the internet and to move privately when we want to. And that most people, the average developer may not care about their own privacy, but we need to think about the margins. We need to think about the people that need to communicate privately on the internet because they live under a oppressive regime or because they are under some threat. And also, businesses need to think about the privacy of their customers. You know, there's some very public data breaches, and if people hadn't retained that data in the first place, that data would not have been available for hackers to get at. So all of us need to take responsibility for the code we write and making sure that it does that it does not retain data unnecessarily, and that it doesn't reveal people's identity when they don't want that identity revealed.
That's it for me, I think.
So, Scott, it's been fun talking to you. There's so many other things we could talk about, but if people want to know more about you or microservices, you know, where do they find out more?
Yeah, ThoughtWorks.com. You might want to look at the radar. We publish a document every twice a year, I guess, and that's ThoughtWorks.com/radar. You can go there. We should have a new edition up on the website in any time in the next couple of weeks. It contains a lot of things that pertain to the microservices world. There are a lot of the little items that we talk about that we throw in there. Some of it is just a new framework that we really like. Some of it are big picture techniques or approaches that we think work well and that people should be thinking about. And I know a lot of people find it interesting.
Well, yeah, it starts discussion, I think, is the main thing.
That's what we want. Yeah, that's what we want. We want it to be provocative.
This is it.
No, it's the opinion of the 16 people that make up the technology advisory board at ThoughtWorks, and we argue passionately about what goes on there. There's something on there, it's because someone felt really strongly about it and wanted it there. And it's not the final word on anything. We always reserve the right. We have strong opinions, weekly held, and sometimes things, you know, we believe in something, and then we learn new things and we change where it is.
Excellent. And ThoughtWorks has a pretty good library of microservices type material as well.
There should be, yes, there is quite a bit of stuff on there. There's a microservices page that has some, and also Martin Fowler's blog has some really good articles that I think probably the number one search result, if you search on microservices, it'd be an article by Martin and James Lewis.
Excellent. Well, thanks for taking the time, Scott. It's been fun and been great catching up with you at Yale.
Yeah, I'd certainly say thank you. We ambushed you, so he wasn't prepared for this at all.
So fantastic.
All right, so there's only one thing left to say, Craig.
Viva la revolution.